This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information. Hey everybody, it's Lon Sipon and Tim Street back again for Behind the Video. We took a week off. Tim was recovering from NAB. Hey Tim.
Hey, I still feel like I'm recovering from NAB.
It's a whirlwind, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you're there, like, I get there early and then I stay late because there's setup to do and tear down to do and shipping to do and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're out late every night, up early every morning and standing on your feet all day and, you know, trying to be on the top of your game the whole time as well. So it does, I'm sure there's a lot of road warriors out there that know exactly what I'm talking about. It's really, really grueling. You know, people who don't go to conferences a lot think, oh, that sounds like so much fun. It is if you're going and you don't have to work while you're there and you can just walk around the floor and check things. I mean, it's still exhausting even if you're just walking around. But, you know, having to concentrate and focus and set up meetings and coordinate them and then troubleshoot when somebody can't find your meeting room and, you know, that kind of stuff. It wears on you, but, you know, overall, I thought NAB was a really, really good show and a lot of productive. I was talking to some folks, they were like, you know, this is the first year in 5 years that they've closed business at the show. So that was good to hear.
Wow, that's great. And you were working the whole time, so you didn't actually get to see a lot either, I guess, right?
No, our buddy Bernie Sue texted me. He was speaking there, and so I popped out with him for about 30 minutes and walked the floor. We went over to GoPro booth and a couple other places. I didn't get to see a lot between meetings. And then I had a 3-hour speaking engagement on Wednesday.
So. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have a couple things we'll talk about later in the show about some of the things that I saw sitting from the comfort of my home office in Connecticut that I felt were interesting, so we can compare some notes on that. But first, some breaking news. Amazon is really getting aggressive, as Netflix is, in producing their own content. And Amazon's taking a different track, and TechCrunch reporting that they are going to, or they already are, putting up pilots of some of their new shows on Amazon streaming service for their Prime customers, I assume, and that they will look at the viewing and ratings that these shows get to determine which ones become a series. And there's a number of comedy shows and a number of children's shows, and it's kind of a different approach. Netflix is betting on things being successful by investing in full-length seasons, as they did with House of Cards and a few others, but Amazon is doing it a different way. So, Tim, what are your thoughts on this whole
thing? I think this is a great idea. I mean, when you look at Netflix, they've got a lot of data. They know what people are watching, when they're watching it, what kind of shows, and their viewing habits. So they can create programming that kind of fits the data that they have on their members, on their paying members. But with Amazon, Amazon's launching some new shows that they don't have data on yet. I mean, Amazon has great data on who's buying what, who's looking for what products, and they're able to super serve them that way. And now they're trying to figure that out with programming. And this just seems incredibly smart to me because they will be able to figure out which shows make sense for them to go on they'll get a handle on people's viewing habits. I mean, this is a huge advantage over broadcast television, where they do the spray and pray approach to programming. And you know, for 50 years or so, they've been creating programs, sticking them up, and trying to figure out if people like them or not after they've already made a bunch of them. So this just seems so intelligent, so smart. I think it's the wave of the future. And this is one of the shows that I tagged in my Twitter with the hashtag behind the video. Mm-hmm. So if you guys, anybody listening to this, comes across something that you find interesting that you think we should talk about on the show, just tweet about it, tweet a link, and hashtag it with behind the video, and our producer Jason will be able to track that down for us to talk about on the show, and we'll give you credit for referring it to us. So
he certainly will, and it is a safe search in my Twitter feed too. So I will. We'll all keep an eye on it. We won't miss it. So that's a great tip. And Tim, what do you think about the way Netflix is doing it versus the way Amazon's doing it? It looks like Netflix is doing the spray and pray approach,
well,
right?
Actually, no. You have to realize that with Netflix, they have a lot of data on the viewing habits of people. They know where people are searching for stuff that they can't find. They know when people are consuming large amounts of something and want more. And so they're creating programming. Like, people devoured Arrested Development on Netflix. And so Netflix said, hey, let's go see if we can light up another season of it. And they did. So that's happening. They have a huge advantage in that they have several years of data of viewing habits that they haven't shared with anybody else. And that's a great big advantage that they have over the television industry, because they can tell you exactly how long somebody watched something, what time of day they watched it. They can tell you demographic information about that person. They've got their email address, who knows what other data they have from cookies that they've put in their browser as well.
And it's actually, I never thought about that. That's a fascinating look at that. So there's some serious development going on there, and with Arrested Development and others, actually. And there's a group trying to save the show, Jericho. Do you ever watch Jericho, Tim?
I was not a fan of Jericho. I never stumbled across it. So I can't tell you if I liked it or not, because I never saw it.
So it has a wildly, and it's funny, the longer the show has been off the air, the more, you know, the more intense this love for the show has gotten. And it's one of those shows where it started, a 24 episode order on CBS, and it was really kind of boring in the middle, and then it really got interesting right when CBS tanked it, and they did bring it back for a second season for like 7 episodes, and then it canceled it again. But the Jericho people have been trying to, I don't know if gaming is the right word, but they have been organizing themselves around watching Jericho reruns on Netflix in order to build it up on Netflix's radar that there's interest in the show in the hopes
See,
of
that,
bringing
that's
it back.
A good idea so, there.
So there's some crowding you can do around getting people to watch reruns of the show you want to have. Maybe it will result in something.
I wonder if we'll see that with Quantum Leap. There are some crazy fans about Quantum Leap. Maybe they'll
Come back, and
Netflix will bring back Quantum Leap.
They can bring back
it'll quantumly leap into your Netflix account.
Right, that's great. You'll take you right back in time. So, but speaking of broadcast, we'll pop through our video charts real quick. And what's interesting is the top 5 on the broadcast networks is not American Idol. That's interesting. The Voice is 5 and 4 on our list, and then followed by NCIS Los Angeles, and of course the college basketball championship game on April 8th with 23 million viewers. So. That certainly won the week, and it almost seems after what happened last week, the 8th of April seems like eons ago, but it wasn't all that long ago. Cable, Duck Dynasty is capturing the number 5 and number 1 spot on our list, WWE at 4 and 2, and in the middle on paid HBO is your favorite show, Tim, the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I've got a few episodes to catch up on that I missed while I was at NAB, so maybe I'll get to that this afternoon before another one comes on tonight.
And I guess they're not measuring HBO Go viewership in these ratings, are they? And this is more
I don't know if that's in there yet or not, but once it is, I think it's really going to jump up, because HBO Go is just, that's the way to consume this stuff, so you don't have to wait around for a specific time. You can just watch it when you want.
That and unfortunately for HBO, BitTorrent seems to be spiking in popularity these days, and there's nothing they can do about it because
that's a perfect example of, if you're making it hard for people to get the content that they want, and buying a full cable subscription plus HBO makes it hard. Whereas if it was just available as HBO Go, I don't think people would be BitTorrenting it the way that they are.
No, if it was available, they would pick it up in a heartbeat. One show that won't be available for long though is Dexter. It is ending at season 8, which I think is probably the right time. It's a great show, except I can't see you know, how they can keep it going as long as
they're killing it off.
They are killing it off. They're going to throw him off the side of Dexter's boat at the end of season 8, which is starting up, I believe, on June 30th. So that's according to TVLine.com.
Spoiler alert. I heard there's zombies in it. No, I'm kidding.
The great crossover with The Walking Dead.
There's zombies in everything now.
That's right. Oh, everything's a zombie these days. And it's the apocalypse.
At least it's not vampires, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there is a new werewolf series on Netflix that's a Netflix original.
Just
launched. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm blanking on the name of it right now off the top of my head. But if you sign into Netflix, it will be featured there as popular.
I am sure it will be. So, films this weekend, Tim, you saw 42. What did you think?
I thought it was a pretty good film. Harrison Ford is amazing in it. And then a buddy of mine, Max Gale, who used to be on Barney Miller, you'd know him as Wojciechowicz, he's in it as well. So it was fun to see Max, making a comeback here in a big film. And it's just a great film about what happened in baseball. So, if you want a feel-good story about how we've overcome racism, at least on the field, this is a great film to watch. Take your kids to see it. You know, it's a good lesson.
Well, it seems like a good film. It's topping the list this week. We don't have the weekend box office numbers just yet, but it looks like 42 is leading the charge and a good it looks like a nice story for once, right, of overcoming adversity. Scary Movie 5 is number 2, The Croods at number 3, G.I. Joe Retaliation at number 4, Evil Dead. Is that a zombie film too?
Could be.
At number 5, and Jurassic Park from 94 is at number 6. So
that's good. That's the 3D version, though, right?
That is. What's old is new again. So run it through the 3D process and boom, it's out there.
Our buddy Christopher Wells Graham told me that he sees Newman. You remember Newman?
Yeah,
What's his name? Wayne? Is it Wayne Knight?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Wayne Knight. He sees him in the grocery store, and we were talking about Jurassic Park and how he was just everywhere back then. Seinfeld, Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, he was on everything.
Newman!
Well, I was at the, as you know, Tim, I was at the Democratic Convention for a couple of days this year, and when you're there early in the morning, there's nothing going on. You just can kind of sit in there and just watch the people. And all of a sudden, you'll see like these little blocks of people converging on something. And one of those incidents was occurring while I was sitting in there. And it turns out Wayne Knight was walking around and attracting all the other people that were just hanging around the arena that afternoon. So he still has some cachet. So at least at the Democratic Convention. So YouTube videos of the week. Lots of unfortunate, tragic things. Two of the videos that made the list related, one was related to the Boston bombings, and the other was that really harrowing video of that fertilizer plant exploding in Texas. Incredible footage. And, I don't want to make light of any of this stuff, but I wish people would turn their phones to the horizontal when they shoot video, because every video we see on the news now is vertical. It drives me crazy.
Really? It's funny. I think in the future, I heard somebody else say this. I can't remember who it was, but I think in the future we will look back at this time, or at least people will. Maybe not us, because we like horizontal, but we'll just go, oh, isn't that quaint that they were so worried about video framing and size? Because it's just what we're used to.
Right. That's true. That is true. And it's hard to make it, you know, display on a regular television set.
To me, it would be interesting, you know, if Apple made it so that you could rotate it, so that even though you're holding your camera, that way you could record horizontally if you so choose.
There's got to be an app in the App Store. If not, I think it would be an easy one to make a quick buck off of. It's just you hit the record, the app, and it records it the way that.
It's much easier to hold your phone that way than it is to hold your iPhone horizontally.
That is very true. So, but some other videos though, not related to tragedy this week. Dove the Real Beauty Sketches, this has been a thing that Dove has been doing for a while now, which is showing people for showing the reality of what people should look like, not what Photoshop or some other video software can do to make them look
better.
You know
what would be interesting to do on this one is to see if there was a way to see how many of the 9 million views that they have of this video are organic as opposed to bought. Because what a lot of times brands will do, and I'm not saying Dove did this, but they will pay to get views to drive it up, and then once it starts making some momentum, then the organic views kick in. And so, you know, that may be a little trick for you guys. If you have a video that you want to get some views, you pay for a little bit, get the views, and then it takes off if it's emotionally compelling content.
Oh, I see. So if you pay YouTube, this is through like the AdSense thing, right?
Well,
so
you don't have to necessarily do it just with YouTube. I mean, you could take your video, post it to a website somewhere, and then drive traffic to that website.
I see. So there's a couple
ways. Or you can post that video on a website that already has a lot of traffic. So,
because I see in my video thing now on YouTube, my video manager, I have a way to click on things and get basically promote my video so
yes.
I could advertise it within YouTube. And I've been starting to see some like weird stuff lately popping up on my pre-roll, like some things that are totally not related to anything I'm interested in. But so that's somebody doing that. So I guess if you watch for a certain length, it'll count that on your view count. Is that right?
Yeah. And you know, before you do that, before you spend that money, make sure you have a cash register set up, because fame without fortune turns you into Joey Buttafuoco. So just remember that.
That's a good line. Okay, so keep that in mind. Do not have a plan to make some money that you're not just paying for views blatantly. And I guess Google's been tracking view length also. So just getting views now is no longer enough, right? You need to be able to have some attention.
I mean, it's one thing if you go, hey, look, there's a naked lady over there. And then everybody looks, there's no naked lady, and so they go back to what they're doing. They're not interested. So you need to make sure that whatever you're promoting is relevant, emotionally compelling content that they're going to watch all the way through. Because if you're making crappy videos and you're spending money promoting them, it's not going to do you or anyone else any good.
Right. Well, that is some good tips there. Number four on our list on YouTube this week is, this is actually a good one. This is a guy that does pranks. And I don't know if this was a setup or not, but you can be the judge of that. This is P-Prank, it's from Roman Atwood. And what he does is he finds a Ferrari parked without a handicap sticker in a handicap spot. So he's exacting some citizen justice, I guess. And he pokes a hole in a water bottle and makes it look like he's peeing on the car. When in fact he's just spraying water on it, and the owner comes out and at the end of it says, "I can buy you," or something at the end of the whole thing. But little citizen justice: don't park in handicap spots without the sticker. Number three is the Hunger Games trailer, 21 million views, huge amount on that one. That's just the teaser trailer.
Think people like that Hunger Games?
I think they might like it a little bit. It's quite a sensation. So $22 million. The author of The Hunger Games lives here in Connecticut, you know. Another Connecticut connection. Number two is the unfortunate incident in Boston, the explosion at the marathon with 22 million views. And I'm sure the other millions of videos that have been created, overall, I think we've seen a ton of traffic. And the fact that the bombers were largely caught by, through the photos that were sent out on social media and whatnot to give everyone out there the ability to try to help the investigation. I'm sure that sped things along. But beating everything else, though, is Psy, who's back again with a new video, and he's already got 165 million views on it.
It's pretty good, huh?
191 million as of this recording. So that is
wow,
impressive.
He picked up some change overnight.
He sure has. And, he's making like a lot of money off of this, isn't he?
It's funny to see him, come back with another song so strong. I was kind of expecting, the Lou Bega Mambo number 5 one hit wonder out
right.
of him. But to see him come back with another one is amazing. And it definitely shows you the power of YouTube.
It sure does. And here's something, incidentally, Tim, the ad that is playing before, I'm just watching the Psy video silently here while we're talking. The ad playing before that video started is the Dove Real Beauty sketches. So there's definitely some paid views going on in that 9 million figure there. But yeah, it's incredible that he's been able to do this. But you know, at the same time, you know, if you think about a Lou Vega album, you had to go out and buy the next single or the next CD. In this case, you know, I'm not having the buy side to help make him successful. I can just watch
his video. No, you're just having to watch Dove commercials.
Yeah, right. And give Cy his royalty, which I'm happy to do. But he's certainly picking up some steam here. Looks like he lost a little weight from the last video too.
Well, you know, once you're on that fame train, they trim you down. They take away all your potato chips.
So no real beauty for Cy here. So he's off the chips, but looking good and making some cash on his YouTube channel. Some other interesting news related to YouTube is one of my favorite YouTube stars is Hannah Hart. I'm sure you know her too, Tim.
Yeah, I've spent time in a green room or two with Hannah Hart. I ran into her at some parties at South by Southwest. She is a doll. She's so funny, and everybody seems to love her, and she's doing great.
And she's made a lot of money on Indiegogo with a Kickstarter or a crowdfunded campaign to take her Drunk Kitchen show on a tour. So she's in a Winnebago right now, traveling the country, and I guess she's stopping in at the kitchens of fans, and she will presumably get drunk and cook with them. Is that the premise?
That seems to be where it's going. You know, the interesting thing is that you would think a show like this would be easy to pick up an alcohol sponsor, but the problem is that the alcohol companies don't want to sponsor anything where people are seen drinking. Mm-hmm. Or getting drunk.
Right.
They have set rules for themselves that they want people to enjoy alcohol responsibly, and they want to show them having fun but not getting plastered. So, you know, we've seen other shows in the past like Tiki Bar TV, which if you haven't checked it out, one of my favorite video podcasts. In fact, it's like the first entertainment video podcast ever, Tiki Bar TV. Steve Jobs mentioned it in his keynote when he launched the video iPod back in the day. So check that one out with, let's see, Lala and Johnny. All right. Johnny.
Are they still doing it?
I don't know if they are. I haven't seen a new one in a long time, so it would be great to see some because I miss those guys. They were a lot of fun to watch. What a great show.
Because there was a lot of people that started on YouTube and then they sort of left because somebody offered them money to host their show on their own site or something. And
sure, yeah.
Like Ask a Ninja did that too, right? He was doing like just previews of the videos he was putting in other places on YouTube, and a lot of the folks left, and then things kind of fizzled out. And I wonder if that if they had not moved off, if they would have really done much better on YouTube in the long run, given how much revenue is out there now.
Yeah, it's tough to say. It's tough to say. I mean, I don't know that the ninja's done. I have a sneaky feeling that we'll see some more ninja coming our way soon.
Well, I think he just went through my room and left. I don't know. He's very, very stealth. Yeah, like that.
You never know. You never know when you're going to get killed.
And you know what's funny with Hannah's channel is that she's trying to get a little – she's not – obviously knows that this Drunk Kitchen thing is working for her, but she's also trying to branch out into other areas, into, you know, being more of a personality as opposed to just having this thing where she gets drunk and cooks in a kitchen, right? I mean, she's
– Yeah, you know, it's tough when you're – you know, when you become famous, when you become Gomer Pyle, it's hard to get out of that because the world has cast you as Gomer Pyle. And so to launch a singing career as Jim Nabors, you're just not going to get the audience that you had with, you know, being Gomer Pyle. And it's tough. I mean, you look at guys like Max Baer, who was on the Beverly Hillbillies as Jethro. He, you know, he had one film, Macon County Line, where he played the sheriff. But other than that, he stuck to real estate and wasn't really able to, you know, take his career any further than Jethro, which is a shame because he's a very talented actor and, you know, did a great job in Macon County Line.
So you could be successful, but be successful in one area, and then you're kind of typecast and stuck, right? So
it makes it tough because people, yeah, you know, they fall in love. I mean, I think Jim Carrey wrestles with that all the time. He wants to do more serious stuff, and, you know, people want him to be the funny guy.
Yeah, they want him to be Ace Ventura and go back to those days again. So we'll have to keep an eye on what Hannah Hart is up to, and she's incredibly talented in many ways, you know, not just what she does in the kitchen, but her She can sing. She's funny. She's very she's great at improv. So we'll see how things develop there. And then One Life to Live, Tim.
I don't know about this One Life to Live thing. It's not on my radar.
It hasn't been on mine either, but I guess this is according to TubeFilter. So fans of the soap opera scene, One Life to Live was on forever. It was probably like one of the longest running scripted shows ever.
Right.
They transitioned it from the TV to web.
Mm-hmm.
So they canceled it in 2012, but the production company, according to TubeFilter, wanted to revive it as a web series, which I guess it started to, and then it has been going back and forth with ABC on some licensing and all this other stuff. It seems out, looks like a kind of a mess, actually. So maybe they should just stick to Netflix, and they'd have a lot easier go with it. They could license it, but I guess ABC has some rights to what they're doing. So we'll keep an eye on that one for the soap fans out there and see what comes about. So app of the week, and then the topic of the week. So briefly, and what we'll talk about in our topic of the week too is we're going to try to bring on more guests on future shows to start getting some success stories and promising practices and that kind of thing. But in the meantime, this week we're going to talk a little bit about NAB. But before we do, some new apps that came out this week that I've been really excited about. The first one is kind of a limited thing, because it's tied to one piece of hardware, but it's something I've been waiting for a long time, and that is it's an app from a company called Strata, and it allows you to control your Blackmagic switcher from your iPad. Sounds really stupid, but it's really, really slick, and I've been using it in my basement studio to record my gadget reviews, and it's made my life a lot easier, so I'm big fan of that.
Why is that? Because you don't have to go to your computer, to your keyboard to control
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah, because what's happened is that, as you know, Tim, I'm, you know, my time is becoming increasingly limited, so I like to make these things very quickly, and usually what I do is I run downstairs, turn everything on, and record a review, and largely post it up unedited. I try to get it down in a single take. But the problem is that you often have to dedicate an entire computer to just the video switching component. And I'm not right. doing anything that fancy. And it's also a little weird to have to use your mouse to like select different camera positions. And I'm used to,
right.
back in my college days, hitting a button and having it do
right.
something.
Right, so now you just have those buttons on an iPad.
Exactly. And, if I had a bigger budget, I would have had the control surface, and this wouldn't be necessary at all. But for $10, it's a great little app that controls your Blackmagic switcher in a really cool way.
And how much do Blackmagic switchers cost?
So the base model is $1,000, and that's the one I have. So it's called the Television Studio. It it switches four HDMI sources. It's not as feature rich as a TriCaster in that you have all of the things in one box. But for very limited applications, it's really good. If you're just looking to switch camera positions, you don't need to spend $4,000. You could spend $1,000 and then hook it up to your computer and be ready to go. The nice thing is that it manages audio. It has a built-in audio switcher, provided the audio is being brought in through HDMI. It also can take audio in a different way, but requires another box and yada yada yada. But it's a really great way to get a pretty basic switching setup going at a very limited price. And the ability to do that now without even having to use the computer anymore really enhances the value of it for me. So a $10 app on the App Store. So check that out. But something a little bit more, I guess, relevant to the rest of the world and the listeners is the new Twitter Music app. Have you played with this, Tim?
I have not.
So I've got a Spotify account. I don't know if you've got one, but it's one of these things where we have this digital smorgasbord today, right? We've got Netflix with a gazillion things to watch. We've got the Spotify now, which is about every published commercial music file ever. That you can just play whenever you want, wherever you want. And the problem with having all of this choice is that you don't even know where to start. So half the time I just end up listening to the same junk I've been listening to for the last 20 years, and I want to find some new stuff. And often have a hard time starting somewhere. So Twitter, just like Netflix, has a pretty active community of people talking about pop culture. And one of those things happens to, of course, be music. And so what Twitter's doing is they've created an app that will link up with your Spotify or your RDO account, and you can see basically a chart of what music is trending on Twitter. and be able to listen to that. You can see what
cool.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's really cool. You can see what your friends are listening to. You can also see what Twitter sees as emerging trends. So artists that may not be at that top level yet, but they're seeing a lot more discussion of those artists kind of moving up the ranks in Twitter. And that upcoming one to me is probably the most interesting of the different things that the app does. Now, if you don't have a Spotify or an Artio account, you're only going to get the iTunes sample of that song. So it's a little lame in that regard. But if you have a Spotify account, as I do, the app links up with their API, and you can listen to the songs without leaving the Twitter app. So it'll stream the Spotify songs through the Twitter app, and of course you can tweet that you're listening to that song. But it's optional. It doesn't do that right off the bat. So really cool, slick app, and that is free in the App Store. So grab that and put it on your phone. There's also, if you go to music.twitter.com, you can do that as well. So it's pretty wild. So that is what I got there. What are you showing us there, Tim?
So we're going to talk about some things at NAB.
Yes, ooh, TV station and a Mac. I like that.
So, yeah, TV station and a Mac was one of the things I took a picture of while I was there, and it's basically just that. Looks like you can hook up some Macs and basically have a broadcast station all in a box. So I didn't talk to the guys. I just, you know, I had very limited time.
Right.
But it was definitely one of the things that caught my eye. You know, Livestream and Ustream and NewTek, all these places have so many things that, you know, used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and now are in the thousands of dollars range. So it's pretty cool to see how you could build something for very little money and you know, if you've got some bandwidth to keep it going, you could have your own TV station in a Mac.
It is remarkable. And what's I'm looking at this now, this is that photo is from the Tools on Air booth, and they have, it looks like, a lot of cool software that you can use to do everything from ingesting. It even has a newsroom, so you can integrate a lot of other stuff just right through your Macintosh. And part of it is that the hardware is so powerful now that you can do a lot of it in software. There's an app for the Mac called Boinks TV, which is a very similar thing. It gives you a lot of switching and digital video capability right within a real-time app, and it's a little bit of work to get it broadcasting, but it's still pretty wild. Some of the things that I saw, Tim, Blackmagic has a new camera called the...
I think they have a waiting line for a new camera.
A pocket cinema camera, and it is $1,000. It is 2K, right? Which is, I think it's 2K, or is it just 1080?
Yeah, it's 2K, and it's like a little bit bigger than an iPhone, right?
Yeah, it's like the size of a point and shoot. It uses the Micro Four Thirds format. So you can, if you have a Micro Four Thirds camera, you can use that, or you can get an adapter and just pop in like your Nikon lens. And there's some really ridiculous photos on their site of like this lens the size of Montana hooked up to this little slab of
camera. Cool.
but it just shows you again just how the cost on this stuff is just reducing. Now, of course, the $1,000 buys you the camera with no lens, and you know, you're probably into it for, you know, $1,500 or $2,000, but you're essentially getting a digital film camera, right? I mean, this is cinema quality stuff for, you know, for less than $2,000 is a remarkable thing for creators. And Tim, what does this do though? So, you know, YouTube starts up 6-7 years ago and, you know, your flip camera was fine. So now the competitive thing happening, are viewers looking for better quality now? I mean, are you going to have to invest in some of this hardware?
Well, very soon they will be. I mean, I think the consumer electronics manufacturers blew it with 3D. I mean, they just didn't think about it in the right way, whereas with this new push called Ultra HD, they're giving you these television sets that have this high-quality 4K, 8K, and it's pretty amazing when you sit down and look at it. It's like, it's almost like 3D. It's like this hyper reality kind of feel. And I've been around it for a long time because of the Red camera and the time that I've spent around Red Studios. But when you see it on a TV set, when you see it on you know, a retina display. It's pretty cool to see this footage. And now that you can capture that quality of footage on a GoPro camera or on one of these Blackmagic cameras, it's pretty amazing to see that it doesn't cost you a lot of money to get your hands on this equipment. And you know, well, you're like, well, there's not that many things that are out there that are in 4K. Well, a lot of films have been shot in 4K, and a lot of films that were shot in film are being remastered in 4K. So I do think that we'll see a lot more programming become available over this next year that's in high quality, and I think we'll see some different, like, high-quality Netflix-type places. I mean, if you look at what Red is doing with the Red Ray, they're kind of building a, you know, an OTT for 4K. And so I think it has a much better chance than 3D did. although, you know, the little robot drone helicopters, yeah, are cool. are the other thing that's coming into play. I think a lot of the footage that you see in 4K will have been shot with these helicopters. I mean, that was another thing that I did manage to come across. Everywhere you walked, it was either 4K or a helicopter that was, you know, that it, a remote control helicopter. So which you things. Have one of those, right?
I do. I have. In fact, it's behind me on the wall there. You can see my my AR drone is back there, and they now the camera on that is certainly nowhere near 4K. It's a little 720p that has a lot of shutter roll and stuff. But they are coming out with this awesome little adapter. So it's basically like an Android device. It's not running Android, but it's the same hardware. So it's like a mobile phone that is in the guts of that thing. And it has a USB port on it, and there's a new device coming out that will allow you to do film maneuvers with the drones. So you can send it up and have it, you know, take a nice smooth shot as it flies over something. Because one of the biggest problems with it is controlling it. It, you know, you're often, you know, you make a move with your iPhone. If you tilt it the wrong way, it'll jerk on you. So they're going to create the ability to create panning, you know, majestic shots and all that kind of stuff. And the scary thing is that part of the thing they're adding is autonomous flight control. So I could go send it off on a mission, so to speak, you know, send it to these GPS coordinates, have it fly around and come back. Shooting all the video the whole way around, and it's incredible, and it's not regulated by the federal aviation authorities because it flies under 300 feet. So
yeah, a lot of these drones will, at least a couple of them I've seen, like if they fly out of range of where you're controlling them, they'll return to where they were set off. So wherever you launched them from, they'll return to base, which is kind of cool. So the GPS technology that comes with them, you know, is putting a lot of helicopter pilots out of business that used to get paid a lot of money to, you know, something that would cost you $20,000 now costs you $400 for a GoPro camera and $600 for a drone. So you're looking at $1,000 to get a $20,000 shot. That's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. And when you think about how much cheaper all the, you know, you could afford to even put your 4K camera up there because it's so tiny and so inexpensive that it's almost not a problem to lose it. And, you know, it's just amazing to see all the convergence of all this stuff all at once. You know, the reduction in the price of storage, because video used to take up a lot of hard drive space. It still does, but the hard drives are next to nothing now, as are the memory cards. So that reduction, the increase in processing power and optical digitization capabilities of these chips that are on these cameras is just moving at such a breakneck pace. So we'll see where it goes. But I think 4K is certainly going to have a greater impact than not. And what's funny is that when YouTube started playing around with 1080p, I felt, oh, who's ever going to watch YouTube videos in 1080p? It takes forever to download. And now everyone's doing 1080p 2 years later. So I think 4K is certainly on the horizon, especially as our bandwidth increases. So we'll have to keep an eye out for this stuff. And I'm glad I didn't go to NAB because I probably would have been buying everything and not using it. So a lot of times, like, you could go overboard with some of this equipment, but if you're not making good content, it's useless, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, somebody said to me, and it might have been somebody from Red Camera, said that, you know, it's interesting to look at all the great footage that GoPro shoots, but there isn't really a story told using GoPro camera yet. Whereas right. with the Red camera, you know, The Hobbit, you know, all these great stories are being told with the Red, Spider-Man, you know, just so. But, you know, as Robert McKee, the screenwriting guru, says, whenever there's a technological advance in entertainment, spectacle comes first, then stories. So
right.
maybe we'll see some stories told with a GoPro camera coming up pretty soon.
And I think there's a lesson to be learned here, too, that, and we'll wrap up on this thought, that, you know, start with the equipment you have and try to really understand how it works. If you have a digital SLR camera, the chances are it records 1080p video already, and you can largely get shots that look very similar, not as good, of course, but very similar to what you're going to get on much, much more expensive equipment. And you really should learn how to work with those limitations first, because once you really start trying to get the most out of what you have on a very limited basis, when you get the riches that a lot of this more expensive stuff provides, you really have an understanding as to how to use it and how to work it and how to make your content really shine. And that's what I found with my, you know, with my little basement thing. I would have loved to have bought a TriCaster, but I really didn't need it. You know, I think now I'm at a point where if I start getting a little bit more traffic, I could probably justify it at some point, because I've added on all this stuff to my Blackmagic setup now to do the things like live streaming and that kind of thing. But at the same time, I didn't need more than what I started with. And I think that's a good lesson to be learned, is don't get too enamored with all this technology. You know, look at the content you're creating and make sure it's compatible with what you're trying to do. So any more thoughts, Tim, on NAB?
It was overwhelming. But the things that I do remember are the helicopters and the 4K. And the Ultra HD is
now, they don't call it 4K, right? They call it Ultra HD. Is that
Ultra HD is the consumer term. 4K is the industry term. So keep your eyes out for helicopters flying over your houses and FedEx guys delivering Ultra HD TV sets to your neighbors.
So you got to keep up with the Joneses, and that will do it for this episode of Behind the Video. Tim, where can people find you when you've awakened?
You can find me at One Tim Street on Twitter.
There you go. Find him there. You can find me at LONSEIDMAN on Twitter or lonseidman.com. And we will be back again next week for another edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.